Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Wednesday, everybody. He's Adam Herhuck. I'm Sean Cantwell. The Tigers have at least one win today, no matter what the hell happens.
Nice. I mean, they're starting to show that they can. It kind of reminds me of report card day, where it's like, I can see you can do the work. Why don't you do it on a more consistent basis?
I don't understand how this team functions and why it does what it does, but apparently the bats are in full force today. 7-0 the score in game one of this series. Game two, probably starting right around the time you hear this, give or take. It's about, I believe, a 3:40 first pitch for game two against the Pirates. A series that I swear it seems like they try and force every year no matter what. Like, I'm sorry, it's just the Tigers and Pirates are never going to be rivalry no matter how much you want them to be.
Yeah, I mean, they're not even in the same
league.
I mean, did they start this right around the time the Penguins and Wings were going at each other's throats?
They sure did.
And they're like, wow, this is great. This works for the NHL. Well, it should work for baseball. Well, why don't we just try to start a rivalry with the Rockies?
Yeah, let's not do that. Well, I mean, I'd be fine with that because at the very least, the Rockies have pitching that the Tigers should be able to hit. Mm-hmm. So I could be fine with that.
Yeah,
but it doesn't matter whether I'm saying this in 2024 or 2014 or 2034 if we're still doing this. That will always be the case.
Yeah, I mean, that's just what it is. I mean, who is the biggest rival for the Tigers? Would that be the Guardians?
The biggest, yeah, I don't know about that. Maybe. Probably,
I guess. It's a one-sided rivalry, if anything, because, you know, the Guardians aren't exactly shaking in their boots every time they meet up with the Tigers.
Well, the last couple seasons, they'll tell you who the biggest rival has been, the Mendoza line. Because Lord knows, no one on this team could crack that if they actually tried. And maybe they are actually trying, and that's the problem. But no, so that's Tigers off to a good start today. 7-0 in game one. First, or game two, getting ready to get underway momentarily. And I've got something from Tigers GM Scott Harris that we need to talk about. I think we need to have a discussion here next. It is happy hour, stick around. Well, we've been asking for Tigers general manager Scott Harris to actually speak to somebody and try and justify this mess that this team has found itself in this season, where they're currently sitting at, I believe, as of right now, 500. And he did go on MLB Network yesterday and had some interesting things to say, which don't have me real excited for this summer. It's the kind of stuff that I guess I should have expected, but that still kind of sucks nonetheless. And look, while it would have been nice if he would have actually talked to the local media at all here, I'll just take the fact that he's talking to anybody, in this case, MLB Network's Brian Kenny, who asked Harris on Tuesday if the Tigers plan to spend like they used to. The Tigers had a top six payroll in MLB for six seasons in a row. Harris believes Tigers owner Chris Illich will increase payroll in the future, though he didn't reveal a timeline. Quote, "From the moment I got here, Chris Illich said that we would have the resources we need to really build a competitive club and to build a club that can sustain winning over a long period of time. We're not quite there yet as far as spending at that level because we need to build the foundation of this team to put us in a position to supplement it with free agent signings in the upcoming winters." That's plural. "I have confidence the resources will be there. The Illich family has always supported the Tigers, have they? And they are ready and eager to do it. I'm actually sitting in the world headquarters for Little Caesars because we have scouting meetings across the street at Little Caesars. I'm confident the resources will be there. We just have to develop the core that we're going to spend around, and we also have to target the players in the upcoming winters that can really help us." He says, as this team currently ranks 23rd in payroll in this team.
Well, I don't know. I mean, when he was starting to make those quotes about Chris Illich, I almost kind of subconsciously heard a rim shot.
Okay, so that wasn't just me then.
Chris Illich says he's willing to spend money.
That's kind of how I feel too. I'd like to believe that he's going to shell out the money at some point, but I don't necessarily believe it. Mostly because, quite frankly, his dad didn't until a good decade into owning. Like, the entire first decade, Illich owned the Tigers. They didn't spend a dime on anything.
Yeah. He was focused on the Wings, which I was fine with.
Well, don't get me wrong. I love the Wings as much as anybody, but you know, the salary cap has been in place for 2 decades now.
Yeah.
Time to start opening up the purse strings a little bit. And
yes.
He did admittedly for the Tigers for like the last several years of that run. But then as soon as Chris took over, those days were clearly over.
Yeah, he was he's gone cheap on players, cheap on front office. It's just
But have you seen the showers at Lakeland?
Oh yeah, well, whatever. Yeah, they feel really good after a good loss.
Right.
I mean, the part where he says, you know, winters, plural. I mean, that's...
You noticed that too, huh?
It's the way it is. It's not like, okay, we're just one piece away from competing. I mean, it's going to take a while. I think if they make the right decisions, and I just don't have enough faith in the front office.
Well, I have two problems with that. For one, in this league, you don't have a salary cap. You literally can spend all the money and acquire at least competent major league players and still probably only be like not even be in the top 10 of payroll in the league. The other is we're talking about we've got to develop this core first. What if this core sucks? Because I'm not entirely convinced that that's not the case yet. Like, your pitching, obviously, okay, you've got the pitching. That's there. But none of the bats, with the exception of Riley Green, have really panned out the way I think anyone was hoping. Like, you've gotten kind of fluky lucky on a Kerry Carpenter and a Wincell Perez every so often. But, like, the big touted names that were supposed to be, like, the cornerstone of the lineup for a decade to come, Spencer Torkelson... They have not exactly panned out. Like, he hasn't panned out so far. Daz Cameron didn't pan out. Riley Green's really the only one that was the one highly touted prospect that has actually delivered what anyone expected of him, like at all. And the rest is kind of there's a lot of question marks there.
Yeah.
And then that's just going to set this whole thing back another 5 years. Like, how long do we keep basically having to push back the development? And here's the other thing with that. And this is the thing that we've seen this with so many teams where this has worked. And I'm surprised that that's not the tack they're taking here, because we've even seen it with, here we go, the Red Wings. It's a lot like the Red Wings. Like, you have to have some veteran presence that's actually competent, guys that, you know, can serve in that mentor role to the younger guys, but also still contribute to an extent in the lineup on a daily basis. And you can't just take these young guys and just thrust them all into the majors and be like, y'all figure it out.
Sink or swim.
I mean, I get that at some point that has to be done to an extent, but I have been very critical of the way that they've handled Green and Torque, because you put them in the lineup where you had one other competent hitter, and it was the corpse of Miguel Cabrera, and you really didn't have a whole lot else in the lineup around them, and you're now basically expecting, all right, you guys are clearly ready, right? Please be the thing that saves this team, because if it all just goes to hell, it's going to be entirely on your shoulders, guy who's only been in the majors for like a season and a half. How is that doing them any good?
Nothing, because we've said it before, losing can be habit-forming. You just get yourself into a situation where, all right, we're going to take the field. We know we're going to lose. Let's just get this over with.
Right, and you never want to start a season like that.
No.
You definitely don't want to be that way 2 months into the season. I get that, you know, if you have to make some moves halfway through the season, trades and things, and try and rebuild the thing, then you got to do what you got to do. But to just come out there and be like at the start of the year, well, we're clearly not making an attempt. That's the sort of thing that can get really demoralizing real quick for a lot of these guys.
Yeah.
And I think we've kind of seen that. Like, the offense admittedly has picked up a little bit in the month of May, but the numbers overall still are not particularly great for any of these guys. And you knew that the bats were going to be an issue. And you knew that you kind of needed somebody to really show Torque and Green the ropes a little bit, because you really didn't have, you had a little bit of that in Cabrera, but by the time the farewell tour came around, he was not the hitter that he had been.
No.
It was still, don't get me wrong, still rather nice to watch him do what he did last year, and it was still really good to see the fact that he's still got some good swings in, but even with that in mind, I mean, obviously you're not getting a lot of the, out of him because he's just kind of a rather slow player at this point. Like he last year he hit 257, but you know, you weren't getting a whole lot of power out of him at that point, and you certainly weren't getting a whole lot of extra base power out of him. Like he's just kind of slow. Like you don't have the greatest. He's a good example, a guy who probably should honestly be a hitting coach at some point.
Oh yeah, he'd be perfect.
But I mean, that's all you really had. Otherwise, like you put a bunch of guys, you know, the Nick Maytons of the world around these guys, and then throw in a Javi Baez who just has the worst attitude known to man, and you wonder why your lineup right now is collectively batting .236.
Yikes,
it's ugly, man. You hate to say it, but and now Kerry Carpenter's out. I believe he's on the 10-day DL. The only guys really hitting on your squad right now are Gio Urshela, amazingly enough, and then Vierling and Perez, who got called up when Parker Meadows got sent down, and Andy Ibañez. Like, the guys who are supposed to be just kind of your filler utility guys are the ones who are basically carrying this team offensively. Even Green's get down to .230 on the year. Admittedly, 9 home runs, but still, you'd like to see better numbers from that than that from your right fielder. So, this is what I say. What I mean when I say that you have to give them a little something. You can't let them just, because then guys like that are just going to get pitched around. Like you're not going to have anyone actually pitching to them because they have to pitch to them because look who's up next in the lineup. You're not really learning how to. You're not getting the best experience in learning how to face major league pitching that way, and as such, everyone's just going to continue to struggle a bit unless they do something to address that. And well, Scott Harris is basically telling you that's not going to happen this year. It might not happen next year.
I as much as I wish he would give us different news, it's the way it is. I mean, you're not looking at. Like I said earlier, they're not just one player away from contending, and their choice in free agents. I'm not a fan. I'm not a big fan of their drafting. There's just really nothing of this team that says, okay, if they just improve on this, maybe the pitching, but that can disappear in a moment.
It can, but also the nice thing is your pitching is surprisingly deep. Like you have 5 really solid starters plus Matt Manning plus the Montero that they're starting today, and there's a couple other guys in Toledo that could give you decent innings if you needed them to. Like right. there's definitely some talent there, I would say. So you're really like I would just ask for, if anything, a couple bats to make this thing look semi-competitive. Like if you just put a couple guys in that lineup that other teams can't just either pitch around or just make foolish by just swinging at slop Javi Baez. Like, this team would be a lot better off. It moves down to the younger guys because, okay, you can't just pitch around Riley Green now because look who's got JD Martinez or somebody coming up after him.
Right.
Like, that sort of stuff does work its way down the lineup. Even though, yeah, you're the bottom of your order is still going to be a black hole 9 times out of 10. Those are the kind of moves that can really make a tangible difference in the approach of how other teams pitch to you and the confidence of these young guys. Like we actually have to throw strikes at this guy now. We can't just throw a bunch of nonsense outside the box and if we put him on base, oh well, because there's someone coming up behind that's going to make us pay.
Right.
Like, we saw that for years, some of the guys they'd put in front of Miggy, like, all right, it makes you a better hitter. So just even that, just a couple of guys who could hit like .250, .260 would have been ideal. Or, you know, someone like a JD who's also got some pop in the bat and hits for decent average. Instead, you got Mark Canha and nothing else. And Scott Harris is basically telling you don't expect much else. And that's disappointing because it's not like you don't have the money to spend. We were promised that okay, once Cabrera's contract comes off the books, once this other deal comes off the books, all right, then we're taking the training wheels off. We're actually going to spend again. We're gonna put that money to use in making this team better, and that hasn't happened. Like, you've got one guy basically making above league minimum in Javi Baez, and that so far is working disastrously for you. It's just kind of, we're at a spot where you have the ability to, like, I know it's not like hockey, yeah, you have a salary cap, you have to work in it. It takes a lot more work to get the pieces all together and be able to afford and then supplement with free agency.
Baseball's a different sport.
In baseball, you can spend as much as you want. Like, no one's going to tell you you can't pull a Steve Cohen and spend like $300 million and just build a murderer's row of lamp. Now, granted, they had nothing to speak of in-house, so when that tanked almost immediately. But there's nothing to say that you can't spend somewhat wisely and put that money towards shoring up the one glaring issue with this team and then fill out things from there. And if you have the core you think you do, then it'll show itself out quicker sooner rather than later. Like, if you get a couple really good bats, like two or three good hitters in that lineup, and combo that with Veerling and Ibanez and Perez, who are hitting really well right now, and guys like Green, who are going to be here no matter what, and even maybe Torque, and maybe you can call up a Justin Henry Molloy at that point and give them a fighting chance to look like a competent baseball team, then you might have something. Whether or not that's going to be what the Tigers elect to do, who knows, but I tend to think not. It's happy hour. It's Solid State Radio. Okay, one more baseball thing, and then I promise we're done. Angel Hernandez. I don't know if you heard about this.
Yeah.
He's officially donezo, and he's already put out a statement saying that, no, I was not forced out by MLB. But does anyone really believe that?
No, because he was having meetings with MLB behind closed doors. And
for like a month.
Yeah. I mean, and yeah, all of a sudden he makes a decision after like 30 years of blowing calls. I posted a nice little compilation video on the Happy Hour Facebook page. Check it out.
I love
it. When you guys get a chance. It's basically just him just blowing these strike calls left and right.
It's what he does best.
Yeah, and it's to the point where it's almost on purpose because he's like, nobody's going to tell me what to do. I'm the umpire.
Well, that's the thing, and that's why he may not have been the worst in accuracy, but that's why he was the most hated umpire in the game, is because he did seem to, like, he lost the objectivity part of it altogether. Like, oh, yeah, I'm going to teach you a lesson, yeah, kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it happened more with him than anybody. Players would get, managers would get rung by him a lot. And routinely, like, he then, if he had an issue with you, like, it would play out every time you face the guy.
I wonder if they keep stats on ejections per umpire.
They
would have to.
You would think so. You know, that's a good question. I will get to the bottom of that.
I mean, because Hernandez has got to be one of the top of all time, if not at least top of the modern era.
Yeah, I mean, you would think so. I mean
there might have been some like umpire in the 30s.
Right.
Hit the bricks, see?
You would think so. I'm kind of curious.
You're on a fly in my ointment. You're out of here, see? Go on, get.
I mean, you would think he's got to be the guy.
No, as many times as see people just lose their minds because ball is wide left. And, oh, that's a strike. That is not a strike. I mean, the catcher had to basically spring to the right to catch that ball.
And so always with him was like this large, inconsistent strike zone.
Yeah.
Like, that was always the huge thing with Hernandez is you never knew, like, okay, it's usually, a larger strike zone than most other guys, like anything from the top of the head down to
the ground
to dirt.
Yeah.
And you never knew when he was going to call something a strike. Like, that was always such an issue with him. So the most ejections, oh, no, this is just the most games. All right, here we go. Ejections. The following are those who have ejected more than 75 individuals in their career. Joe West is in the top five. No surprise to anybody. Good riddance to that guy. I'm surprised how low. Actually, I don't see Angel Hernandez on this list at all.
Really?
That's kind of a surprise.
Are they afraid of him?
Right? Yeah, so he hasn't ejected 75 guys in his career, which you would expect that would absolutely
I thought that was
be.
This season.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. That's a bit of a shocker, admittedly. But, I mean, he's still bad enough that they would absolutely never let him... That was the big thing with him. Like, we can't let this guy officiate a World Series.
Oh, no.
And he actually sued about it.
Sure.
And as it turned out, MLB went to court about, oh, you're discriminating with me because I'm Hispanic. No, as it turns out, we're discriminating against you because you're terrible. And they actually put that in court, like, he's not good enough for this assignment. And they're not wrong.
It's discrimination against the blind. That's what he's doing there.
I mean, that's also true. I mean, you can't be discriminating against blind people when it comes to being able to see things.
Your Honor, we have no problem with a blind umpire except for his C&I dog keeps trying to catch the ball.
There is that. I can't believe I can't find that stat. Like, I assumed it would be quite significant.
I mean, they've got to have his own stats, right? I mean, they keep a stat for everything.
Well, let's see. During the 16, 17, 18 seasons, his calls at first base were overturned in 14 out of 18 video reviews. That's amazing. Like, every time they actually went to a review on something, it got overturned because he's that bad.
Hernandez, come on, man. It's because I'm Hispanic, isn't it?
That's just incredible to me.
It's because your nationality. Yeah, there you go. No, it's just you're blind.
I've forgotten about some of these just glorious moments in this man's history. So he gets called out. This is like 2001. He calls a guy out at the plate who wasn't. And the guest singer for the seventh inning stretch that day at Wrigley Field,
yeah,
told those attendants over the PA system, you know, he's dogging out Hernandez over the PA. You can actually see on camera Hernandez on the field going, "Son of a bitch!" And then the umpire was like, ordered him to be kicked out of the game.
Take me out! Oh, what? Oh, okay. Peace out, guys. See you later. Bye bye.
Like, my, these are just the most just thin-skinned people who exist, like, literal anywhere.
Check this out. From the old era, 1905 to 1941, Bill Clem, 251 ejections. What, they play, like, 10 games a year that? He ejected everybody.
Just everyone, get out.
You go on, get.
But it's not just, I mean, obviously current players have said it. Players for the Tigers have said it. You'll remember Ian Kinsler got fined for saying that Hernandez needs to find another job, and that was what started the whole stupid white armband thing among the umps.
I can't believe I forgot that.
That came up, like, I think possibly the first year we did radio together, man.
Wow, yeah.
Like, right that first summer we were on the air, Kinsler's like, this guy needs to find another job. And then, yeah, the white armbands in solidarity. Like,
oh, we feel so bad. We're being discriminated against.
He hurt our precious feelings. How dare he? And no one cared. It was even bad. Like the TV guys, even Pedro Martinez on TBS a few years back. Like, Angel's horrible. Don't get me going on Angel now. MLB needs to do something about him. It doesn't matter how many times he sues Major League Baseball, he's as bad as there is. And yeah. CC Sabathia's right up there just egging him on. I don't understand why he's doing these games. He's always bad. He's a bad umpire.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at it from Wikipedia, and I can't find him in the top 40 for ejections. And I find that hard to believe. I'm sorry. I just do.
No, I don't disagree with that.
But, I mean, who am I to argue with Wikipedia?
Exactly.
I'll change it when I get home.
I also didn't realize this. So, apparently, after he officiated a game that former Cincinnati Reds pitcher Homer Bailey threw a no-hitter, he asked the pitcher for autographed baseballs after the game for making three incorrect calls that were later overturned on the basis of video replay in the ALDS. Like, that was, I mean, that's pretty bad. Like, that probably should have got him barred from ever working in baseball again in itself.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I made this happen. Here, sign this ball for me.
Right? Like,
to my biggest fan.
like you can't seriously be doing that.
I'd sign it in Braille.
Yes. But no, alas, our long national punchline has decided to step away from the game for good.
Who's going to take his place? Could be anybody.
Literally, it could be anybody. All right, I've bored you enough with baseball. As they say in hockey, let's do that hockey.
Hi, I'm Gary Thorne with Bill Clement, coming to you from the Pepsi Center. Game 7 between the Detroit Red Wings and the Colorado Avalanche. No love lost between these two teams. Bill, do you think there's going to be a death tonight? I like coloring books. Thanks, Bill. Apologize to Bill Clement.
Say, wow, yeah.
No, it wouldn't. Bill would come across with something like intelligent. It'd be Gary going, oh, there's Peter Forsberg. Oh, yeah, he's on the ice. He's on the ice. Oh, look at Peter Forsberg skater. Oh, that's right. There's another team on the ice. Anyway, Peter Forsberg. Yeah.
Wow. This turned sideways in a hurry. I feel like I owe apologies to Gary Thorne and Bill Clement now.
Might as well put Peter Forsberg on there, too, because I made things very uncomfortable.
Poor guy.
Game 4 against the Panthers and Rangers, and anybody who was thinking that the Panthers were just going to go away silently in the night and the Rangers were going to take that. No, sorry. Another game that went into overtime. Panthers. Panthers went. Sam Reinhart in overtime put Florida on top. That series is now tied 2-2. Next game is going to be on Thursday. The pivot, if I could use a cliche, if I may, the pivotal.
When's that ever stopped
game
before?
Five. I'm like every other hockey guy, I'm a cliche machine.
But that's also every player in every interview ever.
I love hockey players. I hate hearing hockey players interviewed. They're just terrible to be interviewed.
They're just so good at spouting cliches, it's like the only thing they know how to do.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Tonight, though, you've got the Stars beating the Connor McJesuses. We have the Stars.
You have them beating the Connor McJesuses? Okay.
Yeah, well, in the series, yeah, 2-1. And it's not just me. A lot of people calling it Connor McJesus, but I mean, that's because Connor McDavid is a really good player. Okay, suck it up, people. He's just really good. Puck drop at 8:30.
Well, who are you going to offend here, Jesus?
Jesus?
Do I need to go?
Jesus has got a good sense of humor.
You should probably put Jesus on the apology list, huh?
Jesus.
Never had to apologize to
deities before.
Right.
No,
deities and other mythical figures have never made it onto this list in the past, I remember.
I think Buddha was on there. I think Confucius was on there.
Probably should be, yeah.
Yeah, so. No, I would think Jesus Christ had a sense of humor. I mean, he'd have to. Stars playing the Oilers tonight in Edmonton. I don't know if that means anything. Stars just don't seem to really care. They'll
beat you wherever. Doesn't matter.
So they may be closing this out on Friday.
To be fair, do you really think that they're going to?
I think so.
That they're going to close it out on Friday?
Sure.
Like, you don't think Edmonton gets one more win in this series? Come on now.
I'm gonna say it's gonna be close scores, but no, I think Dallas will be heading to the big dance on Friday.
I mean, I agree that Dallas is absolutely going to win this series ultimately, but I mean, it's not like the Oilers have been completely barren offensively through this series. Like, I fully expect that. They're gonna get at least one more win in this. I mean, you had a game that went to double overtime, the first game of this series. Like, they're going to McDavid and Draisaitl are gonna put together at least one more victory before Dallas finishes it off.
That double overtime game, that was the only one that Oilers won.
That is true, but it shows you they can absolutely hang in there when they need to. And honestly, the really more impressive thing is that you went a full overtime period without Skinner giving up a goal.
Yeah.
Like, that's quite frankly the most impressive part of that.
I mean, if the Dallas Stars at any point take the Oilers for granted, they're done. That's it. They cannot let off. I mean, the first 6 minutes of this game is going to be pivotal. Come out hard and strong.
I agree with you, but I just don't expect Edmonton to roll over quite that way.
Yeah, well, I don't see them rolling over, but I do think it's...
Well, if you think, okay, well, there's two more games to go, and they're not going to win either of them.
Nope, they're done.
No, that's not going to happen. We're getting at least a six-game series out of this.
TNT, did you hear?
They'll find a way to make that happen.
Gretzky was roasting Paul Bissonnette.
Good. Someone needs to.
Yeah, Paul Bissonnette. Here, a guy who was mediocre at best at hockey, and he became a really good hockey personality. And he is. He is really good at what he does. They were talking about what replica jersey you would get, either Rangers or Florida. And Biz Nasty said he would get a Shesterkin. Igor Shesterkin jersey. And where Gretzky, the great one, says, why? Because you guys are tied in goals?
Ha, he's not wrong.
And that got everybody laughing. Biz Nasty is like, shut up, Wayne. I was like, you don't even say that to Gretzky.
You don't talk that way to Mr. Gretzky.
You say, thank you, Daddy. Because, I mean, Paul Bissonnette does have 8 goals in his NHL career.
But 7.
7? Oh, 7. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know, probably 7 seasons.
You were close. 6.
So was he a defenseman? No.
No, he was just a goon. It's all right.
Yeah. So I mean, I guess there's a place for him. He's better in the broadcast booth, quite frankly.
Well, yeah.
Actually, that talk show that they've got going on for TNT is pretty good. They just let him talk. They just let him have a good time. I think it's a lot of fun. Did you see the one?
Well, yeah, because they learn from they learn from inside the NBA. Just get them. Just let them go. And I mean, that's the best studio show on TV, and it's really a damn shame that's probably going to end after next season if TNT ends up losing the rights to the NBA. But yeah, so they knew what they were building on. Like, yeah. they figured out the formula, and they got, for the most part, the right people to do it. I mean, granted, like I said, Gretzky doesn't have a lot of big opinions on things, which is kind of necessary for these kinds of shows.
He's starting to loosen up, actually. He's starting to have a little bit more opinion because, yeah, before they put him up there and he's like, oh, I just hope everybody has a good time.
Kind of, yeah.
But that's the way he was as a player, too. He's never really chirping.
He wasn't chirping, but that's the thing. Like, you want guys who are going to go out and chirp and give you, you know, exciting, you know, hot takes and opinions and things because that's like the whole name of the game.
That's why Paul Bissonnette, he's disappeared on any kind of roster sheet, but he is actually very good. Being a hockey broadcaster.
Well, yeah. Well, he had a little bit of experience. He was doing the whole podcast thing for a long time.
Yeah. Like, Spittin' Chiclets.
Spittin' Chiclets kind of became a huge deal in the hockey world.
Still is.
Before he ever got on broadcast TV. It was definitely a smart move on their part. But it doesn't mean I'm still not going to dog on him for having just been kind of mid as a player.
Right. I wonder why they haven't gotten Ray Whitney involved in that.
I don't know.
Is it Ray or Ryan Whitney? There was two of them.
Ryan, I believe.
Ryan Whitney.
Ryan's the one that was on the podcast, yeah.
Okay, yep. So I'm a little surprised, but...
Well, it could be any number of things. Maybe either they think Biz Nasty is clearly the guy that drives that boat, or he wanted too much money, or he just can't not swear on the air.
Oh, yeah, that's a big thing. TNT! Whitney, what do you think? F him!
F the whole thing! Like you
that was effing great.
Like you can't have that sort of thing.
No, you really can't. But I mean, I just love seeing the commentators because they're breaking themselves out of this stuffy kind of mold. All the sports are really.
Yeah.
NFL, NBA, NHL. Over on ESPN, you had they brought the Stanley Cup in, and Mark Messier is like, "Come here, you guys got to touch this." And PK Subban's like, "No, no, no, I didn't win it, so I can't touch it." And the whole segment ended with Messier chasing Subban around the set with the Stanley Cup.
That's actually pretty fantastic.
Oh my God, Messier is going to trip, and he's like, clang, 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 clang.
Right, that's all you need.
Great, ESPN's like, well, we're not getting that cup back. Phil Pritchard going, oh, come on, guys, that's my job.
What are you doing here?
It rolled underneath the craft table. Oh, there's nacho cheese all over. Oh, you guys.
Oh,
jeez. I'm going to be here forever cleaning this up.
Right. Well, what are we doing, guys?
This is an amateur hour.
Apparently it is.
Good thing I don't play hockey because I touched the Stanley Cup.
You did?
I did. I got video of me touching it.
Well, now way to go, Adam. Now you're never going to win a Stanley Cup.
I'm never going to win a Stanley Cup. So I guess my very first pair of ice skates, I can just go ahead and put them back up in the attic.
How long ago was this, by the way?
2007. Every time I've touched the Stanley Cup, the Wings have won it that next year.
Oh, okay. Then I need
to touch it this year.
Well, then you better get on that.
Yep.
It is Happy Hour at Solid State Radio. Stick around.
That's it. It's over.
Jack Daniels!
It is happy hours. We get set to get the hell out of Dodge on a Wednesday afternoon, but don't go anywhere. A full hour of local original
shoe cobblers.
Shoe cobblers.
You've always wanted to know on how to take care of the soles of your own shoes. Well, you came to the right place. We're going to hook you up.
I've watched how many pairs of your boots have fallen apart over the years, man. I feel like you're not the person to be giving advice on that.
Hey, can't make an omelet if you don't break a few eggs.
You know, spoiler alert, a few rolls of duct tape will do the job.
Yeah, if you know the differences between a rookie and a master, is the master has failed more times than the rookie has succeeded.
But the master hasn't succeeded yet, so.
That's right.
So, I mean, there's that. A full hour of local original music. That's what we do next at Solid State Radio, because local is kind of what we do, or whatever the hell it is Mitch Gill always
says. Blah, 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 blah.
That too. All being well, talk to you tomorrow at 3. See ya.